Cecil the lion's death at the hands of a trophy hunter made headlines around the world a few months ago, but that type of hunting goes on a lot in Africa. Photographer David Chancellor has been there with these hunters, and he finds one thing particularly disturbing: just how normal these people are. David Chancellor is a multi-award-winning documentary photographer based in South Africa. He's the author of Hunters, and he joins us in the studio now. David, nice to have you. Welcome to Kansas City.
Nice to be here.
On a glorious day to be here, that's for sure.
Fantastic.
How did you get interested in the people who do these trophy hunts, David?
It's not just looking at hunting. What it was doing really was looking at the whole wildlife industry. So it's looking at both conservation and hunting. And the first part of that industry, which in itself is extraordinary that it is referred to as a wildlife industry, was to look at hunting, which is the most obvious form of commodification of wildlife in Africa, where you can actually put a price on an animal to kill it. You know how much it's going to cost, $35,000 roughly, to kill a lion.
Wow.
What was more interesting for me was to try and find out how much it would cost to actually keep that lion alive, and why you would want to keep the lion alive, and why in other parts of Africa other than South Africa, where in those areas, why you would do that and how you would do it, how you would get the local community, convince the local community that they're going to live side by side with an animal that can potentially kill them, and how you can actually allow them to generate income from it.
I was going to say, why did you find it more compelling to find out how much it would cost to keep the lion alive?
Because it's a simple commodification. You can breed a lion. You can breed a lion, which is exactly what happens. You can farm a lion. You know the price. You can kill it. End of story. But when you're looking at cultures that have historically lived alongside lions and have used them as a rite of passage and have, in some cases, protected cattle against it, when you turn to those people and you say, hey, we want you to keep it alive, there has to be some sort of justification. We can't walk up to tribal people, pastoralist communities, and say to them, hey, keep that alive because we want a few tourists to come in and see it. Mm. You've got to convince them the reason we want to do that, and you've got to work with those communities. You know, we can't just inflict our desires on communities like that. You're not necessarily doing that in somewhere like South Africa, where you're actually breeding specifically for a use.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big difference.
You know, we'll have a slideshow of your photographs up on our website after the show today. That's kcur.org. You're trying to make a statement here. At least that'd be my guess. What are you trying to say?
Well, I try and make a soft statement. I'm not necessarily coming out in favor or against. What I'm doing is looking at the whole situation that we're in. You know, this is our issue. This is man as a species' issue. As we are surrounding the wildlife in these areas of Africa, we're putting more and more demands on them. We have to look to generating income from them. We have no choice. Mm-hmm. We have to. If they're going to survive side by side along man, they have to have some return. Unfortunately, that's where we are.
And so the income is used for what, David?
Well, the income, it depends on what you're doing. If you're breeding purely to hunt, then that's income is going to go straight to the people who breed the animals, and it's going to go straight to the farmers, to the game farmers, and to the professional hunters who hunt with them. If you're breeding or if you're maintaining for conservation, then that money needs to go to the communities, and it needs to go to the communities to allow them to possibly learn how to manage the lands that they live on with wildlife, with possibly elephants, with possibly lions, so the cattle can live in harmony with that wildlife. So it's education. The main plus and the ideal goal here is to allow us to live in harmony with the wildlife.
Just how big a business is all this?
It's enormous, enormous. I mean, the figures are extraordinary. I think looking in South Africa at the moment, I think it's something like $101 billion per year is what is the income generated from hunting.
So, $101 billion
a year. It's huge. Huge, mm-hmm. huge, huge industry.
I'm wondering how you got access to the folks who go hunting for these big game animals. And I'm wondering how suspicious you found them to begin with as you began your work.
Suspicious is an interesting word. I'm not sure why I'd find them suspicious.
Because they're
suspicious of my work.
Well, suspicious of your work because some of them would surely think that you're trying to make a statement, maybe opposing what they do, and would be resentful and maybe resistant to offering, having you come along.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why it's interesting, I think, to present this work in the U.S. because the majority of those hunters I've worked with are U.S.-based hunters. You know, there's a layer to this system. There is, when any hunter goes to hunt in Africa, they will hunt with a professional hunter. The professional hunter will be in country. So if it's Zimbabwe, then it'll be a Zimbabwean professional hunter. South Africa, South African professional hunter. So my first point of contact was always the professional hunter. And it was always telling the professional hunter in a logical way, talking about it the way we are now and just saying, look, this is what I want to look at. This is why I'm interested in doing it. And this is what I'd like to achieve from it. And getting that person on board, getting that professional hunter on board, just to understand, I'm not trying to look at this and say this is good or this is bad. This is an industry. I'm looking to understand and I'm looking to try and explain to people why hunting can be part of conservation.
So was it a tough sell? Is it, generally speaking, a tough sell?
Yes, it's a tough sell. It's a tough sell all the way across the board. It's a tough sell to an audience. It's a tough sell to hunters. It's a tough sell to professional hunters. And it's a tough sell to people who really feel that the knee-jerk reaction to something like Cecil the Lion is the obvious one, ban it. But you can't do that because you need to be able to generate income. The more we encroach upon the wildlife, the more we need to understand that we need to generate income from it. Mm-hmm. And hunting has to be one of the ways we do that.
Yeah.
It's a tough project, but there's no point in working on easy projects. Otherwise, nobody's interested in it.
Who tell us about the people, the hunters themselves. What kinds of people are they? Can you classify them?
No, you can't. Complete cross-section. I've worked with guys who...
That'll surprise some people. People have these people sort of locked into a stereotype out there.
Well, it's also why from a creative point of view, I wanted to try and record the images in a way that would possibly reference 19th century hunters, the landed gentry. And that's possibly what I thought I would find from the start, was people who've got a lot of money. It's not always like that. It can be people who are just simply passionate to hunt. Mm-hmm. But it can also be rich people. It can be people, I've photographed trauma surgeons, which are people who you would think would be the last people who would possibly want to hunt. Mm-hmm. Hedge fund managers, who you would probably be the ones that you would probably want to inflict the most hatred upon because of, the financial results of financial institutions. But, there's a massive, massive cross-section of people.
I should point out that David Chancellor again speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Central Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. Go to kclibrary.org for more information and to RSVP and to grab a seat. That's 6:30 this evening at the Central Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. The crowds from the Royal Celebration will long have dispersed by then. And again, a slideshow of David's work will be on our website later on this morning. Just go to kcur.org. So what's their attitude, the hunter's attitude, David, when they go on these hunts? What do you find?
Again, complete cross-section. What I found quite interesting, and it wasn't really something that I noticed and possibly should have done as the photographer, was the way that the women reacted. The women reacted in a very...
Because it's a very distinct difference between the women and the men.
Yeah, very, very, very distinct difference, but only a visual difference possibly. They are much calmer, much more involved with the animals, probably after they've killed the animals, much more involved, quite often would sit next to the animals, quite often would pray next to the animals. Mm. So the image is of a much, 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 much softer. I'm not saying the guys would be, hoo-ha and smoke a cigarette and drink a can of beer. Some of them did. But again, complete cross-section. There would be guys who would be very, very remorseful of what they've just done.
Really?
Guys who would be hugely pumped by what they'd done, people who were respectful, understood the wildlife perfectly. Again, a complete, complete cross-section. It's impossible to generalize.
What did you make of that distinction between women and men? Any grand conclusions about who we are as a people?
Yeah, who we are as a people, yeah. I'm
in
not
25
sure.
words or less.
Yeah. I mean, it was always said to me that, the women made better hunters because they're much colder, much calmer, and their heartbeat doesn't rise, so they're much better shots. So they're much less emotional. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's true. Maybe they showed their emotion after the hunt, after killing the animal, than rather during the whole process.
What do they say to you once they've shot and killed a big game animal?
I'm not there to
chit-chat.
I'm not there to chit-chat.
You're
to
working.
Interview. I'm working, and it's not a slow it's not a quick process. It's a slow process. If you work with a hunter who's hunting an elephant, a lion, any of the dangerous game, you're in for 10 or 11 days. So you sleep on the floor with this guy for 10 or 11 days if that's the way he chooses to hunt his animal. Mm-hmm. And you just record. That's what you're there to do. I work analog, so I don't work digitally. So there's no way that hunter can Or those people around me can actually look and see what I'm doing by looking at the back of the screen on the camera, which again is an important process for me. So it allows me to have a relationship with them that is a genuine relationship. You know, we'll talk about what they're doing, we'll talk about why I'm doing it, but there's never an opportunity for them to say, well, hey, okay, you know, I want to see what you're doing now.
Because they can't.
They can't. You
physically can't, because
you're shooting
the old-fashioned film.
Yeah, but they're involved in the process. You know, I will keep them up to speed when I come back, and when I look at the work and when I edit the work, if they're interested, they'll be involved in the work. And they'll know that there's a bigger picture in this. This is not just looking at hunting. This is looking at the next stage. You know, having done hunting, which was a 3-year project, I then spent 4 years in Kenya looking at community conservation with a group called the Northern Rangelands Trust, who, as I say, you know, there in Kenya, there is no hunting. It was stopped in 1977. So they have to generate their income from working with local communities. So those hunters will know that I'm moving on to that. And I'm still going back into the hunting world, and I'm still going on into northern Kenya. So there's still a real, real relationship between the two subjects. So it is truly looking at hunting and conservation. Mm.
These hunts, you said, take 10 or 11 days. That'll surprise people. I think people think you hop in a Jeep and you drive off into the bush for a couple of hours and you're done and you've gotten your shot.
No, I mean, that's possibly the worst side of hunting, and that's possibly the side of hunting that everybody has that knee-jerk reaction to. That's what might be referred to as canned hunting.
What kind of hunting?
Canned hunting.
Canned hunting. Mm. That's interesting.
I really didn't want to look at bad practice. Bad practice has been well documented. Cecil the Lion was a really interesting and an example and a very good point of reference for me to confirm why I didn't want to look at that. I wanted to look.
Remind us why Cecil the Lion was a bad practice. What happened there?
It's a lion that was, it was a collared lion, so it was under a research program. And it was a lion that was actually dragged out of the national park and then shot out of the national park. So it's, you know, that's not the way that type of hunting should work. Mm-hmm. In that type of environment, you should be working with a local community. The professional hunter would be working with a local community, and he would identify a lion that was at the stage that it had been agreed, was at the stage that it was a time that it could be culled, it could be taken out of the pride. Mm-hmm. Same with elephants. The same thing happens with buffalo under something called campfire, where they will identify an animal that can be taken out. And then that animal will be taken out of the, it will be, a hunter will be brought in, the animal will be killed efficiently by the hunter, and then the income that is generated from that hunter will go to the community, and the community will use it to utilize education, to utilize conservancy.
Generally. But again, 10 or 11 days, it takes that long. Why?
To track, to trail. Something like a leopard. There's a long process to getting up close to a leopard to shoot it. Same with a lion. You'll track a lion. You know, you may, that's what you're in for. You may shoot it on, you may get lucky. You may shoot it on the first or the second day, but you're generally committed to a 10 or 11 day hunt.
And as the photographer alongside these hunters, how close do you get to the animals?
Not that close when it's something like Dangerous Game, not that close when it's alive.
I mean, do you stay back away from the hunter at the point of
No, there's no point in doing that. No, you stay where the hunter is. You shoot next to the hunter.
So you're pretty close in some cases.
You stand with the hunter. If the hunter's close, you're close.
Mm-hmm.
So you stand, there's no point in stepping back in those situations. That's not what you're there to do. You're there to actually document what the hunter's doing.
It's got to be a thrill seeing those animals that close.
If they're that close, they're generally coming for you. So it's not as much of a thrill as mind-numbing.
Have you had some tough moments?
Yeah, there's lots of tough moments.
For example?
Leopards, elephants, always interesting.
I mean, for example, of one that you felt you were in danger.
Yeah, leopards, lions, yeah. I mean, you're walking, you know, you're on the ground. There's no support network.
Yeah.
You know, it's the hunter. And you also, you know, there's a decision there whether you feel that hunter has the ability. He's your first point. Does he have the ability to take the animal down? If he doesn't have the ability, then the backup will be the professional hunter. If the professional hunter doesn't have the ability, then you're exposed. So I would generally make sure that the professional hunters I worked with, I knew what they were doing. And I would also work, you know, when I started the project, I identified which professional hunters I wanted to work because I wanted to work with. I wanted to look at how they hunted and in what particular way they hunted. You can hunt leopard in many different ways. You can hunt lion in many different ways. And I wanted to look at those different ways.
What are those different ways? How do you hunt an elephant one way that's different, distinct from
another? You can
hunt
an elephant with a bow. You can hunt an elephant with a rifle.
With a bow?
With a bow.
How did I not know that? How do you hunt an elephant?
Why would you know it? Are you a hunter?
No, I'm not. I don't. You know, no. How do you hunt an elephant with a bow and arrow?
You get pretty close, and you use a compound bow.
Which is?
It's a high velocity bow.
And a high velocity bow and arrow will take out an elephant
if you hit it in the right place. But there's generally a backup.
I can imagine.
The same with a lion. You know, this is the story of Cecil the Lion. Again, it takes us back. You know, that was initially hunted with a bow. That was the decision from that hunter, was to hunt it with a bow. But he hit it badly. And so then it'll be shot with a rifle.
Mm-hmm. Where do you hit an elephant with a bow and arrow?
Generally through the heart. You're not going to hit it in the head.
Which means pretty much of a straight-on shot, am I guessing?
Usually, yeah, straight on underneath, but then you've got a trunk generally in the side. Not too skilled on all this practice. I'm more taking pictures at this stage.
Yeah, yeah. Clearly, Africa has captured your interest.
Well, I live in Africa, so...
You live there?
Yeah.
You weren't born there?
No, I was born in London. I was born in the UK.
Why Africa? What drew you so powerful?
Extraordinary light, extraordinary subjects. I mean, the light is possibly the best in the world.
The light, how would you characterize the light, David?
You can walk into it. It's like walking into a piece of glass. You can bend your nose on it.
Really?
It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Yeah. The light is extraordinary. And also the subjects are extraordinary. You know, and I'm passionate about wildlife, and I'm passionate about conservation. So it was a natural part of the world for me to go and work in. Although when I first went over there, I worked with NGOs on HIV, AIDS, and those similar subjects.
Where did that passion come from for you, for conservation?
I think possibly, again, which is quite interesting, it possibly came from spending hours, days at natural history museums. You know, it's then only now when I look at the project that I've worked on that I now realize that a lot of those animals in natural history museums have come from hunters' collections when hunters have died. So again, it's full circle. So it's been an extraordinary route for me, and it's definitely changed my opinion of, you know, whether I agree with hunting or not is not the issue. Whether I think, to be honest, whether you agree with hunting or not is not the issue. It's what we have got to do to allow us to conserve. Mm-hmm. And it's a tool, and it's one of the tools that we have to use, and we have no alternative but to use it.
How is Africa changing?
It's changing on a daily basis.
On a daily basis.
Yeah.
And for the better?
For the better, for in some ways, and not in others. You know, the Chinese involvement in Africa is extraordinary. You know, the Chinese involvement... Or the result of Chinese influence on the rhino populations in both southern Africa and eastern Africa is extraordinary. Their building of infrastructure, the building of roads, which allows the dissemination of poaching, but also the dissemination of trade is extraordinary. The investment in Africa from the Chinese, the removal of mineral resources by the Chinese is extraordinary. So it's a phenomenal influence.
I gather you worry at least a little bit about what's going on there, what all this means.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's not, you know, it's I live there. I love the continent. It's not just South Africa. That's a base for me. So yeah, I care deeply about what's happening there, and I care deeply about the clamor to bring Africa up to what we consider to be civilization. You know, I'm not convinced it's the right way to go. And I'm not convinced our desire to commodify and our desire to supply the commodities and their desire to have it is the right way to go. But what right do we have to sit here and say, hey, you know, you can't have what we have? We don't.
But you're not convinced it's the right way to go because why?
Because I think traditions are being lost. I think we're steamrolling over them. And I think the only way those traditions are possibly being held strong is because there's a call for them, and that call often comes from us. The same as the wildlife, that call to go and see remote communities, it probably comes from the fact that tourists want to go and see them. That desire to go and see wildlife often results in wildlife being put into areas where they shouldn't or wouldn't naturally be indigenous.
Yeah.
You know, we will go to a country and we will demand to see in 4 or 5 days, possibly the Big Five. The Big Five historically have not lived in that part of, necessarily lived in that part of world, shoulder to shoulder. So in order to have them there, we have to balance predator-prey ratios.
The Big Five being?
being, you know, you're going to ask me, being rhino, elephant, buffalo, leopard, lion.
Yeah. Well, David Chancellor, again, you can hear and see him speak tonight, 6:30 at the Central Branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. Go to kclibrary.org for more information. He's the author of Hunters. His extraordinary photographs will be available on our website following the show today. Just go to kcur.org. David, thanks for coming in, and thanks for your good work. We sure appreciate it.
Well, thanks for inviting me. And yeah, on a day like this, it's extraordinary to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you.
A pleasure to be here. Thank you.